Hello, 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 and welcome to the Velvet Studio, home of Always Queen Media. We're coming at you from the capital here. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. Did you forget who we are and where we're playing
again? No, I was, maybe a little bit.
You're just doing sort of Barack Obama pauses.
Yes. Yeah. I do declare. Well, he's not.
Actually, have you seen Michelle Obama impersonate him?
A great impersonation.
Well, it's the pauses, really, what it is. But anyway, yes.
I mean, I can pull it up and we can witness it. No. Or we could just tell folks to Google it. Michelle Obama impersonating.
Just Google it.
His face? Barack Obama.
Barack Obama.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So this week is going to be a little bit more unstructured. After coming off of doing Refugee Month, we wanted to have, you know, at least one casual episode to sort of decompress and, you know, catch up with this and that.
Yeah, we're looking at a bit of a sporty feel for today's episode.
Well, I mean, we like to think we are. I mean, I don't really sports my body if I don't have to.
No. Yeah. I mean, I did once, but I was being chased.
Yeah. Sportsed my body once, but it was on accident.
Yeah. That one time, and I sportsed it for like a good 2-3 minutes, and then I got on the bus.
Right. Did you make a sweat?
I did make a sweat.
Ew.
It was uber gross. My body did a sweat, and it was just like...
Oh. No, I say that, and yet I bike here. And if you ever hear this sound...
You were almost dripping with sweat when you got in.
If you hear this sound in the background, can you hear that?
Yeah, well, I can hear it, but I'm in the room with you.
Well, the microphones are surprisingly sensitive. Anyway, I admit that I carry a folding fan.
He does.
I do.
It's very fancy.
This one was given to me, though, when I lived in Japan. And I keep saying that this is a masculine folding fan, not a feminine one, which in Japan, by the way, there is a distinction. And people keep asking me why. And I was always like, you know, I can't put my finger on. And then I remembered it's because it has plum blossoms on it, not cherry blossoms.
Oh, and that's the distinction.
Yes. Yes.
Plum blossom.
They have, well, I mean, they have their own flower codes. So, you know, like here you have yellow roses for friendship and red roses for romance and white roses for sympathy. And
ooh.
Did you not know about that?
I knew white roses was a thing.
Yeah. And also lilies, white lilies is a thing. And carnations is a woman's love for a man.
Oh.
Yeah, carnations are supposed to be for men. That's why, like, men are supposed to wear carnations on their lapel, and then women are supposed to wear roses.
Oh.
Because they give them to each other.
Oh, that's neat.
The whole flower code. Well, they, you know, every culture that has flowers, i.e., every culture has meanings attributed to different plants. So, I mean, this is nothing alarming. The fact that they've gendered it, I think, is interesting. But, you know, we've gendered flowers in general. Like, if a woman wears a floral pattern, then that's just, you know, being a grandma. Whereas if a man wears a floral pattern, that's being a homosexual. So.
This is true. Yeah. This is. Although I do have a good friend who also does a show here at CKCU, which is where we're recording today.
You know what?
Show.
Actually, it just occurred to me. Hawaiian shirts are an exception.
This is true.
Yeah.
In which case, you're just an American tourist.
Yeah. Yeah. Or someone who's really fond of bowling.
Absolutely. Bowling?
Yeah.
Well, they have more of that, like, weird pattern for bowling shirts. Bowling shirts are a bizarre fashion unto themselves.
Actually, there was a trend in the late 90s where bowling shirts and bowling shoes were in, but the bowling shoes weren't, like, actual bowling shoes for bowling in. They were just shoes that were designed to look like bowling shoes. And they were made of, like, suede with nice comfortable soles and all that. Bowling shoes are actually quite classy. Actually, these shoes are kind of like bowling shoes, the one that I'm wearing now. These are like my only fashion shoes. I got them for, what did I get them for? I got them for 60 euros when I was in Belgium, as one does, because shopping is what Belgium is all about. That's not even sarcasm, by the way. Like, people think I'm joking when I say, you know, if you're going to Europe and you want to do shopping, go to Belgium. Because they have Dutch fashion and they have French fashion, but they don't have Paris or Amsterdam prices. So you can actually get, because these are Coq Sportif, which are...
The sporty cock?
Well, sporty rooster.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And literally, that's actually what it translates to. But it's sort of a mid-high range line of a label. And they mostly make high-quality versions of sportswear. So, like, you know, jogging pants with the stripes down the sides, but it's made of satin and velour and that kind of thing. So some of their stuff is hilarious. Like a lot of the Cook Sportif stuff looks like, I don't know, like stereotypical Russian mafia kind of tracksuit kind of look. But they make beautiful shoes that are very comfortable, very nice shoes. Why are we talking about this? Let's talk about This Week in Queer News. What you got?
Yeah. Well, I was looking up. I had to scroll back. So we use Feedly. Strongly recommended to everybody.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Absolute asset. So we use Feedly. And I've been saving sporty type news for the last 2 months.
Okay.
But I save a lot of news, which meant that I had to go and scroll through and scroll through and scroll through and try and find the actual...
the bits that are interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, apparently Idina Menzel wants to star in the Wicked movie adaptation. I would watch that. You wouldn't, though. It's a musical.
Yeah, well, it's musical theater. That's the difference. I like musicals. I do not like musical theater. Because if I ran through a list of the musicals that I do like, most of them are disco or hard rock,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I mean, Xanadu is Camp Valley. Have you ever seen Xanadu? Has Olivia Newton-John?
No.
The seven muses come down to Earth in the late 70s to convince a man from L.A. to open a discotheque. And all the muses are on roller skates during the entire movie. And
what else would they be wearing?
And if they roll fast enough, they turn into lasers. So you have these, like, laser beam roller skate angels, and they're singing disco, and it's Olivia Newton-John, and it's pretty campy. There's also the Village People movie, which I've shown to you.
We did see that.
Yeah, which is, it sounds terrible, and it is, but it's kind of fun. The Wiz. I love The Wiz. The last song, I don't know if you've ever seen The Wiz. Have you seen The Wiz? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
The last song is about 10 minutes too long.
Oh.
It's after they kill the Wicked Witch and they have this like huge disco extravaganza, and it should have been 4 minutes, but instead it's like 15, and it's repetitive, and they don't really do anything new or different, and if they just cut that down, the whole movie would be fantastic, and I just, that was, here, I'll move that.
I don't know what that is. There's like wires and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, there's stuff everywhere in here.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes.
So that reminds me actually of that Netflix series that's up that kind of is centered around the disco scene.
Oh,
really,
yes.
Really cool.
Something up. No, I thought it was The Get Down.
That's the opposite of Up. Yes. Great series.
There was an Onion article from, oh my god, it was like 10 years ago now, and it was, there was a gang fight in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
where there was half of the gangs wanted everyone to get on up, and half the crowds wanted everyone to get on down, and there was a third minority group who just wanted everyone to get it on. I love The Onion.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh, now that's a gang bang, like, dude. What a day. So yeah, the news, I mean, understandably, the recent news has been so heavily dominated by the presidential debate. Apparently, Donald Trump may have, this is an allegation that's to be unproven, but may have
lied a bit.
Oh, yes. He may have told a fib. Yeah. He may not have been entirely honest. I don't know if that was newsy. And possibly racist.
So, I have been actually reading a bit lately on the American...
Oh, well done.
Oh, thank you. The American statutes on high crimes. And
as one does.
As one does. And there are a whole bunch of things that Trump does basically on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
that qualify as high crimes, except that he doesn't hold office, and so therefore there's nothing to impeach him from. But basically, even if he does win, like, there's a pretty strong case that he's going to be doing impeachable things on the first day, let alone the first week.
Mm-hmm. So what he may have done,
may or may not,
is funneled about 60,000 into talking to the Cubans.
Oh, yes.
During the American embargo against the Cubans. You're not allowed to spend any money whatsoever.
Okay.
In talking to the Cubans during this embargo, and it is alleged that he funneled this money through some consulting firm, who then told him to make it look like a donation to a charity, which didn't actually really exist.
And probably his own charity.
Yeah. No, he gets other people to donate to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he may have broken the embargo against Fidel Castro, which is quite an interesting turn of events. But, yes, the gay news has been very heavily dominated by
Trump.
Although,
well, the U.S. elections, yeah, in general. Because I mean, I know a lot of people are afraid of what progress has gone on in the states backtracking. Under him, and not just for LGBT rights, but for a whole bunch of things, civil rights as well, are kind of backsliding a little bit.
Now, have you seen this? This is incredible.
I'm very tepid about Randy Rainbow.
I love this because he actually made this song sound like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Because was it Trump that used the word braggadocious? Yes,
I don't know.
He does like using that word. Okay, so here we go. This is just an idea. We will only play a little clip, but this really got me rolling in the aisles earlier today.
Rolling in the aisles.
Welcome back to the first presidential debate. Mr. Trump, let's get back to what you were saying about Secretary Clinton's makeup. You mentioned she's been a little heavy on the eyeliner lately.
Is that okay? Good. I want you to be very happy. It's very important to me. But in all fairness to Secretary Clinton, she's been doing this for 30 years.
Sweetie, do you need a tissue?
What's happened to our jobs and our country and our economy generally is, look, we owe $20 trillion. We cannot do it any longer. I am very underleveraged. I have a great...
Well, let me just get... It's taken a while to get there. Where are we?
You're so well organized.
Oh, I know. I didn't realize there's so much jibber-jabber.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, here we go. Oh, here we go. Now it is.
Likes to throw big words around and hopes that we all notice. If he keeps repeating them, they might just make him POTUS. Super careless, fragile ego, extra braggadocious. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? Are you really gonna vote for this guy? He says that he's the man and thinks he's got the Midas touch. But does he have a plan to fix the country?
Not so much.
And if you're not convinced by all of that hyperbole, he says shut up, just buy a stupid hat and vote for me. Hey, super careless, fragile, that's why Hillary's relaxed. This time Bill Clinton might as well sit back and play the sax. His wife erased her emails and now Trump wants total access. Then once hell has frozen over, he'll release his taxes. Are you really gonna vote for this guy?
So the song goes on for a good 2.5 minutes, and I thought it was... I mean, who'd have thought to make a meme video based on Mary Poppins?
A gay man.
This is true. It would occur to a gay man.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all, suffice it to say, that the news, sadly, has been very heavily dominated by Donald Trump.
Yes.
There was that one with the Canadian Conservative MP, who I forget the name of, who may have floated the idea of looking at conservative values and possibly cracking open the old gay marriage debate. And like, oh, really?
There's actually a whole bunch of YouTube ads lately from the Canadian Christian Foundation or something. I cannot remember. It's a real actual party that's on the federal level.
Oh, wow.
And they have almost gotten seats multiple times over the past 20 years, but they've never actually held a seat. And they're just really fascinating, and I don't understand how they think they're going to get any traction whatsoever. But yeah, so the gay marriage debate in Canada is not really a debate. I mean, gay marriage debate in Canada is all between quotation marks because, you know, most people just sit around staring at them going, like, what? I don't get it. But yeah, actually, there's a new François Xavier movie that came out, so that's news.
Yes.
Haven't seen any trailers for it because it is a Canadian film and an indie film, which means we have to wait 2 years for it to get leaked onto the internet.
I mean, you can go to like a tiny film festival in like Sault Ste. Marie. Why did I pick a place name that I can't pronounce? Why did I do
North Bay.
Timmins. There we go. you should go to a tiny film festival in Abbotsford. There we go.
There you go.
Or Cape. There's a lot of capes in Britain, in Canada, actually. Everything's got a cape. There's so many capes. Anyway, Cape Breton. There we go.
Yeah, Cape Cod.
Cape Cod? Yeah, this is true.
That's a place.
Lots of capes. If you live in somewhere that has a cape, tweet us. I'd love to see what you want.
Cape in the name, not some dude wearing a cape.
Yeah. No, there's this one guy always wears a cape. Capes are coming back in. I nearly bought a winter coat with a cape. But then Jake sent me a clip of...
I think you could pull off a cape.
I think so.
Yeah.
Jake sent me a clip of, you know, The Incredibles, the movie?
Yeah.
And then there's like that tiny little woman who does the she does the costumes.
Okay.
And she goes, no cape.
No
and
cape.
She just kept telling about how all of these superheroes died with a cape.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I was told that I can't have a cape in case I get sucked into an aeroplane or in a tornado I get stuck attached to a missile. Or so anyway, cape.
I don't see any of those things happening.
So... back to ish topic. Kerry Lang is our featured song artist for the week, mainly because I couldn't think of anyone else. But so Kerry Lang has teamed up with Nico Case and Laura.
You know, instead
Bates.
Of saying that you're too simple to think of something more creative, you could have just jumped into they have a new album and I'd like to showcase it.
No, it's true. They do.
That's what you should have said.
And we're showcasing the first song that was released by them.
Jake is here laughing at
but,
you.
But well, he always laughs at me. But we always so we're showcasing this song. And it is Atomic Number. It is by the aforementioned. And yeah, they just teamed up, got together, wanted to do a collab, and they did. They released an album with just their names.
Okay.
And then the other two songs we have today are just Kerry Lang on her own.
Like sort of a Crosby, Stills, and Nash kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Except it's Case, Lang, and Veers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, this is Atomic Number. We'll be back just after this. Welcome back. And we are joined in the studio by me being garroted by headphones. Hang on. There we go.
That's you don't hear headphones. The word garrote very often.
No, I know. We should bring it back along with braggadocious. Was that the word? Yeah.
And plebeian.
Plebeian.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I've been saying plebeian for years, and I completely forgot that Latin was an iambic language.
How you just disgrace.
Yeah,
shame.
I know.
Shame. So, Jake, how are you?
Not too bad, yourself?
Oh, you're like a million miles away from the mic.
Oh, sorry.
There we go. It's like you've decided to sit 20 meters away and then have a conversation. I know I move away from the mic a lot, usually when I'm looking at things.
Which like the
isn't
monitor.
The mic, and I'm like pushing buttons and all that kind of jazz. But no, I mean, you can't sit in the next room and then talk to the mic. That's not how that works. So how was your day?
You didn't even turn the mic up. Leave.
I did turn the mic up.
Well, you did after he spoke and after you started teasing him.
Yeah, well, he was also sat 5 feet away.
You're a bad man.
This is true. I'll probably pay for it later. This is also true. I have no doubt about that. So we were talking about...
That's not some kind of a sexy thing either. It's just going to be Jake's like, make your own tea. At least
absolutely.
Like
all right. So we were supposed to be talking today about the Olympics. Now, one of the stories that I love about the Olympics is when people do the news coverage of the Olympics.
Yes.
And they have the little title banner thingy on the bottom, and it says like who the people are, what their score is, and so on and so forth.
Yep.
Well, as I'm sure you know, and you can see by the news story I've pulled up there on the right, when it comes to Olympic diving,
mm-hmm.
or even just any water-based Olympic sport,
yes,
when you have a little title bar with someone's name, it kind of makes them look naked. Because they're usually wearing the tiniest Speedos.
Oh, yes.
The tiniest Speedos. And then you've got this overlaid bar, like NBC was particularly keen on having it right in the most innocuous places. And it just looks very, very suggestive.
Mm-hmm.
I think BuzzFeed did a quiz where they put shots of Olympic athletes with like a bar. Uh-huh. Where the broadcasters had their details.
Yeah, next to a picture of porn scenes with a bar across the bottom. And you had to guess which one was
which
real.
One's pornographic and which one's actually just Olympic swimmers like in the shower.
Yeah.
And that quiz was surprisingly difficult
it's
to
very
get.
Difficult,
it
yeah.
was very difficult. Yeah. Some quite hard actually, yeah. On the whole I know. Oh, that reminds me. Did you see this? This was adorable. So in the UK, there's a toy company called, Smith's Toys UK.
Okay.
So they're kind of like Toys R Us, but, well, yes, yeah, essentially Toys R Us.
Except British.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do have Toys R Us in Britain. Anyway, so Smith's Toys did this ad, and it has this animated boy. And it's a little bit of a song about if I was a toy to the tune of If I Was a Boy. Here we go, just give you a feel. So it's all about this boy who's playing with different toys that were all animated. But he dresses up as the queen and goes, play as the queen of the land before jumping into a Millennium Falcon. As one does. I mean, there's an animated ad. So this 40-second TV ad
mm-hmm.
had this boy dressing up as a... Well, animated version of a boy dressing up as the queen, which was pretty cool and has been very broadly applauded in the UK for kind of breaking down those gender barriers.
Mm-hmm.
So major toys provider being like, yeah, bring it.
Well, there is actually an interesting movement if you pay attention to, the right sources anyway, where a lot of, it's children, actually. There are some bloggers who are like 12 and under, or usually they're vloggers because it's a little bit, text is nuanced in video. You can just be really good at presenting, and there's a few really good speakers out there. Very young children who are just complaining about the toy aisles. In toy stores and how they've been divided by gender for so long. And they're like, why is Lego in the boys section? That's stupid. And it's actually, by the way, it's because of Toys R Us that video games have a misogynistic history.
Really?
Yeah. Because when they first started...
Can we say alleged? I don't want to get sued by Toys R Us.
No. It's It's yeah. But it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't something that did intentionally.
Okay.
When video games were first marketed in North America, they needed to choose where to put it, in the boys' aisle or the girls' aisle, with no concept of having a neutral aisle. Now there's just a video game section.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were new, back when it was just like Atari games or the Commodore 64 or whatever, it had to be put
somewhere,
quote unquote, had to be put on the boys' side or the girls' side. They put it on the boys' side. And so in North America, video games became a boys' thing, whereas in Japan, right from the start, it was put into a different section. It was put with board games.
Mm.
Because a lot of the original video game producers also made other kinds of neutral group toys. They were marketed as group events, not as private events. Not events, group
activities.
Activities, there you go. And so they don't really have that history. There are games that are more marketed to boys and more marketed to girls in Japan, but generally speaking, playing video games is not gendered, whereas it is in North America, and a lot of it is just because of the history of toy stores.
Weird.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So you just learned something.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like a sound for that.
What's really interesting is games that are not designed to be gendered but kind of end up that way by accident.
Such as?
Katamari Damacy. I know more.
Is that the one where you roll around?
Yeah. The big sticky ball one.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. That is like my favorite game.
It's so adorable. Generally speaking, women and gay men are the biggest fans. Not that there are no straight guys who like it. It's just really appealing to women and gay men for some reason. For
really,
reasons,
you roll around. And my favorite bit is when you roll over a person
and they start screaming,
and they go ah! And if you hit like a crowd of them, it's like ah!
If you've never heard of this game, you need to look up the opening because
that was a good one.
It is so fantastically camp. I think that's probably why it appeals to gay men, because
this
it's just
probably true.
I mean, it is a man in tights with a giant cup flying through space, showering mushrooms and ducks onto the world. It's just fantastic.
But I think that speaks to a very good point that actually ties to one of the other stories I have, the Olympics, and that's masculinities and how we perceive masculinity.
Okay, yes.
One of the big news stories that came out of the Olympics was how, I think in one of the water sports where people have the biggest opinions, in one of the water sports, the Chinese won probably gold or silver or something, and they just did just a little tap on the shoulder. I don't have to demonstrate on you, but they did like a little tap on the shoulder. Yes, jolly good, well done.
Yeah.
And then I think the Brits got like silver or bronze, and they were like hugging.
They were all over each other, yeah.
Just like really showing affection and celebration. Yeah. And I think it was the Daily Mail that called them out on their hug. And being like, why can't you just have a handshake instead of a hug? And it was crazy that people were questioning the sexuality of Olympic athletes.
British culture is very much like that, though, where they don't like touch until they do. So, like, if you watch any kind of... Well, a lot of movies, actually, from Britain. Even Lesbian Vampire Hunters, which is a hilarious movie, by the way.
It's a hilarious movie.
And the whole Simon Pegg series, so like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead.
It's the Cornetto trilogy.
Yeah. They're all like, you know, well done. And they just sort of like very gently like pretend to touch each other, but don't actually. And then, you know, they very hesitant. They don't even like touching each other's hands when they shake hands. And then they get drunk and then they're just hanging off each other like, I love you. You're my best mate. And it's just like, no, that's... You know, not to stereotype, but I've actually witnessed that. When I lived in Hong Kong, and there's a huge British population there, they really were like that. During the day, there was like a bubble of like 10 meters around each of them. And then at night, when they were drinking, it was like, you know, you had 10 of them on a couch designed for three. And they were all straight guys. And they were just like hanging off each other. And it's very bizarre culture. So, I mean, like, when you see stuff like this, I mean, when they're not in their Speedos and when they're just sitting around being interviewed, they're probably like... 4 feet apart from each other, just being like, yes.
I mean, also, I think it undermines the fact that these are Olympic athletes at the very top of their game, and they've just won a medal that makes them the third, second, or first best in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I would be pretty stoked if that was me.
Well, you say
I
best mean, in the world, and yet there's
I don't support my body, but like...
The caveat with the Paralympics... You don't know what I'm talking about.
Actually, didn't they do really well this year?
There was about a dozen people in the Paralympics who got better results than the people in the Olympics. And one of the ones was the, I think, 500 meter dash, where three of them, the bronze, silver, and gold for the Paralympics 500 meter dash, got better than the gold in the Olympics. And one of them was blind and had to have, there's like a sound thing that they follow. And then there was two hard of hearing ones who had to see the flashing lights so that they could start. But, and it's, they I know that they have classifications for different kinds of disabilities in the Paralympics. So there's like sensory disabilities, mobility disabilities, that sort of thing. And the, a lot of the sensory disability ones where their bodies are just fine. They just can't hear or see. Mm-hmm. Or they see or hear poorly enough that they can't compete normally.
Yeah.
A lot of them are getting way better results. And then, of course, there was the last Paralympics. So that would have been, I guess, 2012, where there was the one guy who had the two prosthetic legs that bent backwards. I don't know if you remember seeing them, but they were like these weird scoop-shaped things, and they were like robot legs. And he like tripled the Olympics gold medal. But that's because they had a spring in them, and they were designed to be shaped like kangaroo legs. And so he just, like, boing, boing, boinged across the field.
Oh, I think I saw that.
You saw that?
I think I saw that as a meme, though.
No, no, it was real.
Yeah, no.
Guy had robot legs. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Yes. So,
I'm sure he would rather have, like, meat legs.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, that's pretty cool to have robot legs.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Point being, folks, watch the Paralympics. It's where it's at. Robot
it's,
legs.
Yeah,
and
it's
people
really
doing extremely, extremely well. We're going to play a cliche now.
Yes.
Which is Katie Lang again,
uh-huh.
of course.
Uh-huh.
We can't not play Katie Lang after mm-hmm. I've introduced it. And this is what I think
I'm
most
sure
people
could.
Would recognize Katie Lang from, is this particular song. Do you have any thoughts on this? I'm sure you have many thoughts.
No, I'm fine.
You, oh, you want it? Okay. This is Constant Craving by Katie Lang. Hello and welcome back. We are, we've just come off the end of our refugee month. Because September, it has so many Thursdays in it. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
There are five Thursdays in September.
Well, every so often you get a month with 5 weeks in it. It happens.
That's preposterous. There should not be five Thursdays in 1 month.
What you're saying is we should all write our local representatives.
And have them.
And complain.
Amend this outrage of five Thursdays. I was like, oh, let's do refugee month. And I'm thinking like three, maybe four episodes. No, five.
Yeah, no.
Five episodes. Five Thursdays in September. That's a bee in my bonnet. Five Thursdays in September. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. If you are interested in checking out our four-week September special on Refugee Month, look at our website, velvetstudio.ca. The banner image, I think, has a link directly to all of the episodes in one page. It'll only take you about 3.5 hours to listen to them, so...
Well done.
Yeah, but it's well worth it. We talk to the UNHCR, Human Rights Watch, and Capital Rainbow Refuge, and a local immigration lawyer.
Also, if there's any topics you'd like for us to cover in the future, you know, mail us or email us, tweet us. There's all that stuff. Have we announced our actual Twitter account? Do we have a Twitter account? We have a Twitter account.
Yeah, we keep getting people to give you... We keep trying to get people... to have a piggyback ride from you, remember? But nobody wants a piggyback ride. I feel like they underestimate your piggyback ride abilities.
Yeah. I think maybe I'll guilt people into it tomorrow.
Oh, why tomorrow? Because today is your birthday.
It is, yes.
Should we sing?
Absolutely not.
You can sing.
I hate the birthday song so much. God. A few years ago, I remember saying to a bunch of my friends that if they did have a birthday party for me, they absolutely could not sing the birthday song. And they're like, well, what do we sing when we bring the cake out? And I said, totally Eclipse of the Heart. And they did it.
Wow.
And I was very happy because I think Total Eclipse of the Heart is a slightly better song.
It's just one cut above. I always find it amusing when you go to certain restaurants, and because Happy Birthday is it owned by Disney, or it was owned by Disney, and
what owned by Disney?
The Happy Birthday song. So corporations can't actually do it. So they have like their own happy, 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 happy song, and it's like, oh, just want to die. My mother did that once to me at, I think it was Issei Mario's, or the one where like they have the brown paper on the table and you can draw on it because we're all children.
There's like a dozen places like that. That's, I think, true. Lone Star's like that.
Yes. Yeah. No. Wait. No. Maybe.
Yeah.
What is your least favorite place to have a happy birthday song sung at you? Let us know at Velvet Studio One. We'd like to just be pleasantly amused by your horror stories of having people sing at you.
That was actually last year for me.
My
dad invited me out for dinner to Eastside Mario's.
Oh, wow.
And I have an aunt whose birthday is close to mine, and so we went out to Eastside Mario's. And the thing is, I'm gluten intolerant and she's lactose intolerant.
Oh.
And we went to a pasta place.
And got lasagna?
And the two of us were just sitting there looking at each other like, I don't think they get it.
It was so no bread rolls and just a salad for you.
Oh my god. And they did this thing where they made me put on a hat and I had to stand up on a chair, and it was,
oh my god,
yeah,
that sounds deplorable.
Yeah. And it was in Gatineau too, so it was all in French. Which is neither here nor there, because this was the side of my family where half of them don't speak a word of English. They're monolingual French. And so the fact that it was in French, that was not the thing. It was just...
I mean, and you're a tall man.
I'm
so
tall.
So to have you awkwardly wearing this ridiculous hat on a chair...
And on a chair, yeah.
Did other people in the restaurant join in?
It was late at night and the restaurant was almost empty. So that was small blessing.
Small blessing.
That was a small blessing. Also, actually, I had a really good moment that night because one of the waiters came over... And
was he cute?
Using waiter as a gender neutral term here, it was a waitress.
Oh, okay.
And I asked her if they have a separate menu for gluten free because I didn't want to actually have to like read through every single thing and ask them, what about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? And then she's like, okay, I'm just going to go ask and I'm going to come back and just point things out to you, because she was like, we don't have a separate menu. I'm going to have to ask the chef. So, okay. And so while she was gone, my one aunt was like, I hope they have no problems accommodating your issue. You know, this I'm translating for French. Because she was like, you know, she was trying to be sympathetic that it was a gluten-free restaurant. And I was like, oh, I don't care if they're homophobic. And and then everybody was laughing. She's like, that's not a problem. It's okay. And I was like, honey, I know it's okay.
It's satire.
And it's my French family, the French side of my family, like, everybody knows that I'm gay, but it's never really brought up because it's... there's nothing to talk about. And so but it was one of the first times I actually made a gay joke in front of them, and yeah, they didn't know how to react to that because they're not really used to that. Whereas my mom's family, they're sort of half Irish and half Dutch Jew, and so their sense of humor is really complicated.
Yeah. I once got nervous meeting a former boyfriend of mine's mother, and I made a joke which mortified my at the time boyfriend, and it turns out it was a fellatio joke that I didn't necessarily put two and two together. First time meeting his mother, he literally just come out maybe 20 minutes beforehand. not the best moment to crack a joke around that particular topic. What was the most inappropriate joke you've heard? Let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And it's all about timing. Absolutely all about timing. Now, speaking of good timing, coming off of an Olympic win is a great time to have your limelight stolen by somebody proposing to you.
Which
was one of the issues at the Olympics, was that
there's about a dozen proposals.
Yeah, they were, and a lot of them were same sex.
Yeah,
a lot of same sex proposals, because it is legal in Brazil. Gay marriage is legal in Brazil, although apparently, according to one group, there is still rampant homophobia, with about one person who's GLBT killed each day in Brazil. Bearing in mind that Brazil has a massive population and quite a high murder rate. But even still, that's quite a phenomenal number. But not to detract from the great news that was all of the wonderful, wonderful marriages or marriage proposals that happened during the Olympics. I think that was one of my favorite things about the Olympics, is watching people sports their bodies in Speedos. And then all of the nice good news coming out. There's a lot of really pleasant good news out of the Olympics.
There can be.
Yeah, and people got terribly patriotic.
There's a lot of questions about the viability of the Olympics, just because it has a habit of destroying cities. There's definitely that. Especially velodromes. Velodromes are the worst.
Oh, is that the thing that you cycle around in circles?
Yeah.
Did you know that Brits are apparently very good at cycling in a circle? We have nailed that down. If you give us a big circle to cycle in, we have got that. We have that.
I remember a few years ago when I was living in Hamilton, and they were putting in a bid for the International Commonwealth Games. And there was this huge issue about velodromes, that they were willing to do it because they had the facilities on hand to do. They had to have a FIFA grade soccer pitch. They could do that, no problem. They had to have all the usual, like, Olympic size swimming pools, and they had no problem with rowing, because there's technically, depending on how you count, there's three lakes nearby, so they had no problem.
Where is this?
Hamilton.
Oh, right, yes.
Absolutely no problem with most of the things, and it came down to the velodrome, that they were only going to put a bid in it if they could figure out a way of building a velodrome and not having it just rot when they were done. So they had to come up with a velodrome design that could also be used for something else after.
What can you use a giant, like, egg-shaped thing that people cycle in, which isn't just for cycling in?
They were thinking about repurposing it because it's on an angle.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tracks are sloped, so that they can bank the corners.
Were they just gonna, like, push it out flat in it or something?
No, they were gonna bolt chairs to it and make it an outdoor amphitheater.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, that was their idea, that it could be repurposed as an amphitheater afterwards. But then, I mean, they would have to have a covered velodrome, which makes sense, because the time of year that the Commonwealth Games happens, it tends to rain a lot in Hamilton, so they're going to put a cover over it anyway. Just have sort of a semi-enclosed...
I think it would be much more exciting if they were cycling in a circle in the rain. Like, that would just be...
Because they would
be
all wipe out on the corners? Level.
Maybe on the corners, really?
Well, I mean on the curves.
What? There's any corners in the velodrome. It's just one big pod, almost.
Well, it's not a huge... It's like an oval. You have a straight, and then you have a curvy bit.
Yeah.
And it's the curvy bit where they would probably wipe out.
This is true.
Or when they're changing lanes or whatever. Do they change lanes?
I don't know.
I don't think they do.
And they have little clickers. So as they're going at, like, 50 miles an hour, they just, like, slowly merge to the left. oh, my gosh. You know what I saw recently? And it has to do with...
Was it a kitty?
No, I did see the putty cats.
Yeah.
But I saw a video that was looking at supermarkets and how in the US, everyone walks around the edge of a supermarket to the left, so it's clockwise.
Okay.
And in Britain, it's counterclockwise.
Okay.
And it has to do with how people drive.
Yeah.
Because they all drive in that direction anyway. So the supermarkets are designed to echo... driving. And if you've seen me with a shopping cart, then you can totally get that understanding. Also, I'm still shopping cart on the wrong side, so, you know.
Because you're a bad man.
I'm a terrible, terrible bad man.
Although, really, you should go in the opposite direction anyway. If you're doing a large enough grocery that you're going to, like, fill a car.
Yeah.
Because I usually just bring shopping bags with me because I walk home with it anyway, so I don't want to carry anything more than I can. Yeah.
We had to invest in a, like, those old lady wheelie shopping carts.
But if you're shopping with a shopping cart, you should start at the other end, because then your frozen goods and things in boxes are at the bottom, and then your fruit and eggs and delicate things are on the top. Because Eddie Izzard actually had a whole stand-up routine about how they lay out grocery stores. That when you walk in the front door, it's all the fruit and vegetables, and you just go, oh, it's so fresh, everything here is fresh. And you never walk into a grocery store, and the first thing you do is walk into, like, the cleaning.
The frozen pizza aisle?
Well, no, he specifically said, like, the cleaning goods aisle, because in the toilet paper and all that, because you don't say, this is a poo store, and so, yeah.
Although they always have, like, the big on-sale, like, toilet rolls. And, oh, wait, I don't understand that. Once every couple of weeks, toilet rolls will have, like, this massive sale.
Well, they
have with such frequency, I'm like...
Maybe they're afraid they're going to spoil.
That's what I don't understand. I'm like, well,
toilet paper has really low markup. But, like, they're really big, and you have to store them. So if you ordering, you have, like, constant order every month. Then every time you don't sell enough, you have to put them...
But then you just adjust the order amount. Like, I just don't understand why...
There's a reserve amount every store keeps.
And emergency toilet paper.
You could say, well, of every brand. So they don't want to lower the amount, but they want to get rid of stock. Then, you know, sale makes sense.
I don't know.
You're really good at logistical planning.
Toilet paper sales, that's my conundrum for today. Now, we are going to go back to sports and at least something a little bit gay. So, Rachel Bruni is a silver medalist in the 10-kilometer swim, in the women's 10-kilometer swim, was the first Italian openly gay Olympic athlete.
Okay.
And there were an awful lot of Olympic athletes. In 2008, there were 12. And now this year, in 2013, there were 23. And I'm just trying to find out how many are here. But there's a lot more than 23. I think it was closer to 30-something.
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite cool. And some of them are from Canada. We had Melissa Tincrady, who is in the Canadian soccer team. And there's quite a few in the Canadian soccer team. Actually, did you hear that the Canadian soccer team, Marie-Yves Nowell, also Canadian soccer team. I butchered that pronunciation.
Yeah, you butcher most pronunciations.
This is true.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had some homophobic slandering during the soccer matches. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, there was a news story where, you know, doing some people jeering in the crowds during the soccer matches with some homophobic slurs. In particular, over the soccer, the women's soccer, and the crowds had to get
hosed down.
Well, no, I don't think they hosed them down, but the individuals responsible were spoken to.
They should have hosed them down.
Yeah,
no. I mean, if anything else, it would be fun, right? You have a hose that's on like a mild sprinkling, and you're just like spraying the audience because you know Brazil is hot, and so you're like, nice fresh. And then if anybody's being a jerk, you just turn it onto high pressure and just give them a good blast, and then you go bad, bad. You know,
I do that with the cats.
They should have people like stationed around the like stadium
to
with
squirt
like
the viewers, yeah. like yeah, how you
see,
do cats.
You see a drunk guy or you yeah. see like a hooligan just squirt them with water
and fill the thing with vinegar as well, just so that
that's mean.
So you get the message across.
Or paint.
What? What?
I would.
That's well, you need to mark them. You need to give them the red letter.
Yeah, it's like, you know, God. One of those bubbles that when like thieves stole them and then you pull out the thing and it just explodes, so you mark the thieves or like whatever.
What movie was that in? I watched it with my brother. There was a movie and it had that guy that everyone thinks is hot but who's actually kind of mediocre.
That's a lot of guys.
Yeah, I know. It's a... bloody hell.
What is it about?
It's a detective movie and there's this one scene where they've tracked down a criminal and they're like, look, I'm not even on your case, guy. And they're private detectives either, so they don't care if somebody's committing a crime and they're not on that case. And then they're like, by the way, that bag is stolen goods. You should not open it. And then like this, they open it anyway and there's just like blue paint everywhere and then... I don't know.
So Russia has been in the news a lot. You know, they there was a town which nearly had a pride parade because it was authorized, and everyone was like, "Wow, you authorized a pride parade!" And they were like, "Oh, yeah, no, that was a filing mix-up. That was totally a filing mix-up." And now there's talk of apparently a GLBT spy in this town's bureaucracy. That switched the fires so they would approve this pride parade, which was then shut down anyway because it's Russia.
Right.
But yeah, like, you know, espionage in the municipality. Like, that is a novel I would read.
Homosexual I would agenda. Read that.
And there's also a news story about Homoto, which is the only gay motorcycle gang.
What?
In Russia.
Awesome.
And I'm like, if you're going to be gay in Russia, being in a motorbike gang is probably
a lot of the bike gangs in the 60s in the American Midwest were gay. They were former military who came out of World War II and they formed that sort of brotherhood and they couldn't go back to their normal lives afterwards and so they became a bike gang. That's actually there's a lot of literature
it's
on really it.
It's really strong.
Interesting.
Like the leather community. Yeah. Actually next
I
month
was gonna
is
say. If they wear that much leather, they might as well be gay.
This is true. Well, I think it...
Well, the leather look is partly based on that history.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we, next month, over the next few weeks, we'll be talking about history. As in the US, it's Gay History Month. I don't know when the Canadian Gay History Month is. I don't know if we have one. So we're just going to... We're going to have Gay History Month next
month.
We're
going to have our own one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we're going to be talking about things about how did... What's the connection between the German SS and leather clubs?
Yes.
There is a connection.
Possibly.
That isn't racist. but it has to do with the fact that, you know, it wasn't Tom Ford. Who was the guy who designed, Hugo Boss maybe? That designed the German uniform?
Armani. It was Armani.
I don't think it was Armani. What?
Pretty sure it was.
Wasn't it?
It might have been Hugo Boss. Anyway, a famous designer designed the uniforms.
Why are we debating when I have the internet in front of
this
me?
This is true. Anyway, point being that these uniforms were often, bits and pieces of them were stolen, like the caps and the chaps and so on, because they were in really good condition.
It was Hugo Boss.
Yes,
yeah.
Nailed it. Okay. So that's a really interesting quirk of history, but we will get to that in much more detail next week and a few weeks after as we look at Gay History Month. We're playing up with another Katie Lang.
Mm-hmm.
This one is Sexuality. And that's all from us today. Thanks for joining.
But it's a new one, isn't it?
I'm not sure when it came out.
You should look these things up.
I should.
Okay. Look at the description.
I mean,
2008. There you go.
There you go. 2008. So,
seriously?
Now you just make me look bad.
Just press play.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
You can't even work. Cute.